This is Creating Consciousness, a podcast reflecting back to you the energies of your subconscious through tarot, channeling, and spiritual guidance. I'm Rebecca Wierman, intuitive, spiritual coach, and energy worker. You found this podcast because it's the next step in your healing journey. Together, we will explore the depths of your subconscious to awaken and welcome this consciousness. Hello, conscious creators. Welcome to Creating Consciousness, a spiritual and intuitive podcast for self-growth. Welcome. I am so happy to have you, and I am so excited to share the first guest episode of season two of Creating Consciousness. The guest we have on today might be one of my favorite people because after knowing her just a short amount of time, we clicked and I had the most eye-opening and expanding session ever with her. Today's guest is Tara Newton Gill, love guide and woman empowerment coach of Truer Love. Truer Love is a progressive platform dedicated to supporting female people through their love relationships. Their purpose is to expand the collective feminine confidence, consciousness, and intuition so all women can toss out the misguided fairy tales that have never served them and replace them with stories that help women cultivate healthier and more satisfying relationships in real life. And oh my goddess, how many of you have gotten caught up in the fairy tale relationship fantasy bullshit? I know I have, and not only was it the fairy tale movies for me, honestly, I feel like it was like shows like Secret Life of American Teenager. Oh my gosh, I can't even believe I just admitted that. Secret Life of the American Teenager and like Gossip Girl, that romanticize these really toxic relationships within people, but because the media presented them to us, we all thought that that's what we needed and what we needed to achieve. And how many times did we watch princess movies growing up where the princess has to be totally submissive to the king or to the male counterpart? So out with that and in with real love. What I really appreciate about Taryn's work is that she specializes in attachment theory. And I've worked with attachment theory before, both in my own shadow work and in therapy, but the way Taryn positions it and really uses her intuition to help guide you deeper into your own attachment and how you're showing up, both in your family relationships and in your romantic relationships with attachment, is fascinating. And I feel like I've never gone deeper before. So thank you, Taryn. I feel that you are going to get so much information from this episode because she really does have a lot to share. Something I'm super fascinated by is how our attachment style is rooted in the shadow and how bringing that to light and bringing that to our conscious awareness can make it easier to navigate relationships and consciously communicate with our partners. And as we talk about attachment, something that kept coming up for me was how a lot of clients will come to me and they'll want to find out if this person that they're seeing is their soulmate or their twin flame, you know, all that new age bullshit. And of course, I'll hold space and try to find out that answer from spirit. But what I really want to hone in on and tune into is why the client is asking that question. What shadow elements are still at play and what needs healing on a deeper level so you can allow the universe to just bring you your partner rather than, you know, having to get psychic confirmation. Because you should be able to trust your own intuition when it comes to your person. It's interesting too because Taryn and I really get into the topic of self-love, and so many times you hear people say you need to love yourself before you can love another. And I feel that that is something that's so cliched, but it is true, but we actually need like theory and sentiment to back it up. And I feel like we cover that in this episode. So I'm excited for you to listen to that. There's so much. I could have just kept talking to Taryn forever, but I wanted to make this episode as accessible as possibly can. So whether you're driving to the grocery store or listening while you're cleaning the house, there's still time for you to tune into your daily rituals. And of course, don't forget, at the end of every episode, there is a short little intuitive tarot reading, helping guide you deeper to the unconscious and subconscious wounds, and of course, lots of affirmations. You know how much I love affirmations. But I think it's time we get into this episode because there is so much to unpack. Let's get into it. Taryn, hi, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, I'm so excited to be here.
I am so happy to have you because yesterday I had the opportunity to have a session with you and you provided me with so much insight. And I've been working on attachment and therapy for such a long time now, but the way you describe certain concepts, it just for me solidified the work in attachment even more. And the information you have is so valuable. So I'm so excited for the Creating Consciousness listeners to hear from you today. So thank you for taking the time.
I'm happy to. I'm so glad that it all resonated with you. That's my goal in life. So yay.
Yeah, it was divine. So thank you.
I mean, okay, I'll take it.
As we dive in, let's just spiritually profile you off the bat. Go ahead and give me your big three zodiac, your human design, or any other spiritual modalities where you've been labeled.
Okay. My three big zodiacs, I'm actually double Gemini. I'm Gemini rising and Gemini sun. So that's fun. And I'm Cancer moon. So I find it to be a really great balance personally, because I've got, you know, a lot in my head, but then I've got it's balanced out with my really emotional inner world.
Oh my gosh. I'm double Gemini.
Stop it.
I'm Libra, Gemini, Gemini. So ascendant and moon. So this makes so much sense.
This makes so much sense why we get along so well. And also Geminis and Libras. I mean, I love all the Libras in my life. So it just, all of that makes so much sense.
Wow. Oh my gosh. That is wild. And it just resonates so deeply. So it makes sense. So we know you're double Gemini with the Cancer moon, you said.
Yeah. And then let's see, human design. I am a manifesting generator, which, you know, it's funny because my husband is much more sciencey than I am. You know, he definitely questions my spiritual side a lot, and which I think is a really balanced and great thing to do. And we usually end up in the middle that science and spirituality are one and the same. But he actually was impressed with human design because when I learned I was a manifesting generator, it was like undeniable. Everything right down to how often I eat and how I sleep is just like to a T manifesting generator. All my life, I've had so many different interests and projects and things I don't, you know, like I'm doing a million things at once. And I always felt like something was wrong with me because of that, that I wasn't just like picking one path and climbing the ladder, you know? And so it was just like this moment of freedom and total recognition when I learned like, oh, this is actually my strength and this is how I work and this is how I function. And so it was a pretty cool thing to learn about.
That's incredible. Human design is one of my favorite modalities to look into. And once you start living your design without judging it, life just seems to get a little easier.
It does. It's true. So those are kind of the main, modalities that I know. I have read the Enneagram, but I found it a little confusing and I don't remember what I am.
Yeah.
I'm sure there are more that I'm just like not tapping into or thinking of right now, but those are the main ones that I kind of use in my life. And then I'm an anxious attachment, but that we'll get into that down the road.
I love that. So now that you bring that up, why don't you share with us a little bit about your journey, what you do, and how you began in the attachment theory work?
I call myself a love guide and women's empowerment coach. Short term of that is I'm a relationship coach. I don't work with couples yet, but I help, basically my goal is to work with women to help empower them. I say that I have three pillars at my, I call it a platform or my company, Truer Love. And my three pillars are to help women expand our confidence, consciousness, and intuition. so that we can have relationships that serve us, basically to let go of the fairy tales we've been told our life, all our lives, about how love is supposed to look, and really embrace what real love is. Because I find that there's more magic in real love than in these fantasies that we have in our head. And I was led to those conclusions through learning about attachment theory myself. I'm going to be 36 this year, and I just got married. My younger sister has been married for 10 years, along with most of my good friends. And I was the black sheep for a long time. And I had a lot of feelings about that, both resenting the fact that everyone made such a big deal about it, but then also secretly wanting a partner and hating that I did. And also just feeling like I never understood what was going on in relationships. I would like be great on the first few dates. And then the minute I realized I liked someone, I would just become a bumbling mess and question all of my feelings and motives and ways of talking to them. And I didn't know what it was, but it was this intense anxiety and I didn't know where it was coming from. And my therapist ended up saying something about my attachment style. And I, you know, listened to a lot of podcasts and heard this concept of attachment style briefly on podcasts. And so it kind of piqued my interest when she said it. And I was like, wait, can you go back to that? And she explained it to me and I was still a little confused, but then she said it again, you know, later on. And then she recommended the book Attached, that I know a lot of people, it's kind of the most famous attachment book, I think, most popular, with the pills on the front in the shape of a heart. So I started there and my mind was just like completely blown, and it answered so many of my questions and problems that I'd been having dating. Of like, oh, I'm an anxious attachment style and I'm dating avoidant people. And the combination of that is to a T like how all my relationships would play out, which is that I would be, you know, close and kind of just show my interest at first. They would be kind of withdrawn. The more they would start to get overwhelmed with emotion and withdraw, and it would trigger me to make me feel like they were gonna reject or abandon me. But I wasn't able to express how I felt because I was afraid of being rejected and abandoned. And so I keep it inside, and then the resentment would build, and then I'd go motherfucking crazy.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And then they would ghost me, and then the trauma would repeat itself. So it was a lot of fun. You know, people say dating is fun, and I would be like, what am I missing? Because that's not really fun for me. So as I started studying and learning about attachment theory, I was also dating, you know, different people at one time, which is something I work with women a lot in my coaching practice, is, you know, we have this idea that we're finding the one and we fall in love really easily with one person. We kind of start to romanticize them. But the idea is like, no, it's actually healthy to not necessarily be sleeping with multiple people at a time, but seeing multiple people at a time. And in doing that, you're able to kind of see like who's meeting your needs and who's not. And so I was dating a few people, and one of them was my now husband, who at the time I was like, I liked and I got along with, and it was natural, but anxious people tend to be more attracted at first to people who are not good for them, because it makes us anxious and we're familiar with that. Anyway, but I was able to identify that he was secure because I had more understanding now of what I needed, and I realized he was giving it to me in all these ways. And, you know, and now even my relationship is just every day is still amazing. And so that journey just made me really feel like, man, like if I'd only known all these things when I was dating and suffering, and we're not taught these things in school. My whole, you know, mission and my purpose with my company is to provide women the support that I felt like I needed and didn't know where to go to and felt really alienated, to provide that for women as they're dating, especially because in our world, women are basically conditioned to be less confident than men, in my, you know, opinion. Like we are, our confidence often is comes from being validated by having a relationship, by a man, by how we look. And I really want to help women unlearn that toxic patriarchal bullshit, to feel more confident, to be more aware of their needs, to be willing to express their needs more, so that they can start finding relationships that are really supportive and not, you know, making them cry every night in a black hole and drink a bottle of wine like I would. So,
oh, that's what I used to do too. Well,
they, you know, I mean, it works at the end of the day, but
right. But do we really want it to work?
Right. Like for the moment it works, but you know, you wake up and then it starts all over again. So.
Exactly. Well, you briefly touched a little bit about what attachment is. Would you be able to go a little further into that for the people who don't necessarily know who are listening?
Absolutely. Attachment, it's a scientific framework for understanding how humans connect and relate to each other, especially in intimate relationships like parent-child or romantic partners. Mm. But your attachment style, everyone in the world has an attachment style. And anytime you interact with anybody in the world, be it someone at the supermarket or a good friend or your partner, your attachment style is present. We have hormones, you know, oxytocin and vasopressin are the main ones in our, what's called our attachment system. And they are what help us connect and feel sexual desire and, you know, feel close. Oxytocin is what women secrete when they give birth. So it's often known as the love hormone or the cuddle hormone. And so that system, basically, when we feel there's a threat to our connection with someone who we've deemed significant, our attachment system can react to that and it can be activated, basically. And so when I'm having anxiety over someone, my attachment system is activated. And basically how we all relate to each other is based on how we were parented. It's about our comfort level with vulnerability and with expressing and receiving emotion. And that determines kind of if we're more aloof in relationships and keep to ourselves more, or if we really need people to feel better, or if, you know, secure people tend to be independent and be able to self-soothe, but also able to give and receive love. Whereas the insecure attachment styles, there are three insecure styles: anxious, avoidant, and then fearful, avoidant, or disorganized, which are a combo of both. Those insecure styles tend to not be as comfortable with vulnerability, and in the way they connect with people is a little bit harder. So that's kind of what attachment theory is and where the styles come from.
Something I picked up on was you had said that it's formed a lot in our intimate relationships, specifically with our parents. Mm-hmm. And you just spoke about self-soothing. And there's this study in which children were left alone to self-soothe.
I think you're talking about the strain situation test.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a really famous study in attachment. And that is basically where our understanding of attachment styles comes from. Because John Bowlby, who is the father of attachment theory, and his assistant Mary Ainsworth, they put together that test. Because John Bowlby, he really was focused on understanding how children form emotional closeness and bonds based on their relationships with their parent and how we're conditioned. So that is initially where our attachment styles come from. And so what that test was basically a researcher there would be a room, and a parent would come with their toddler, maybe between ages like 1 and 3, I think. And the parent would go in this room with the kid, and there might be toys or something in the room. And then the parent would leave for 3 minutes. And in that 3 minutes, they would see how the child would react. Would they self-soothe? What would they do? And so the children who were secure, basically, maybe they'd cry a little at first that their parent was gone, but as soon as their parent came back, they were forgiving, they were happy again, they were ready to play with toys. Which, you know, all humans biologically crave connection. So it's not an insecure thing that the child would cry. They're used to their parent being there, you know, and secure children tend to have parents who were consistently emotionally available. So more than not, they would meet their emotional needs and or physical needs. But then with the insecure types, so for instance, the avoidant type, when the parent would leave, the avoidant type might not even show they were distressed on the outside. Like they might not cry, you might not see it. But when they ran tests on the children, their heart rate and their cortisol levels showed as much stress inside as it did with the other children. And then when the parent got back, they would still act aloof. So it was like they avoidant children do self-soothe because they were likely neglected in childhood emotionally, or they could have been abused emotionally or physically. Or it's just that their parents are kind of, they tend to be more aloof themselves. So they're not used to that emotional attention. And so they have to learn to self-soothe. So, you know, the child, instead of going to their parent when their child was back or when their parent was back, they ended up just like, they try to de-escalate that feeling themselves, but they are feeling it. They are still stressed out that their parent left. They just don't know how to show it. They don't feel it's safe to show it.
Right.
And then the anxious child basically would cry when their parent left and would maybe kind of like be looking for them a little more frantically. But then when their parent came back, rather than just being ready to play with their toys, like the secure child was, they're still upset and they're still crying because they've been abandoned, because they are not, because with anxious children, they tend to have one parent who is secure, who, so they get used to that feeling of secure love, but then they have another parent who is more inconsistent, who sometimes is available, but sometimes isn't. And so then they're always have this anxiety waiting for that child, that parent to withdraw emotionally or go away. And so they're very sensitive to that abandonment factor. So they tend to have trouble forgiving as easily. They get a little more upset. So that test was amazing in being able to show us these distinct styles for how children respond to being left alone and needing to self-soothe. And the anxious child is not as able to self-soothe. Mm. Other researchers later learned that they often are carried into adulthood because we're conditioned at a young age, usually around two or so, is when our attachment style has formed. And it can change, and that's a whole other discussion, but for the most part, most people carry their attachment style with them into adulthood and their adult relationships.
It all comes back to the shadow, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Everything comes back to the shadow.
Always. And so those formative years in our youth and in our infancy is where our attachment is truly formed. Mm-hmm. If we are unaware of our attachment style and we then enter into relationships as adults, how does that show up in our adult or, I mean, even teen years?
I think it's just a lot of confusion, you know, and I think that I would say most of people don't know about attachment,
right?
is my understanding. People kind of in this wellness space and these circles tend to know what it is, but by and large, a lot of people don't know what attachment is. And so I think what happens a lot of the time, obviously there are other factors in our lives that affect who we are and how we show up in our relationships. Our personality is a big one, our core values, you know, lots of things contribute to how we act and who we are. But I think that what happens is we end up attributing a lot of these intense emotions we feel in relationships to other factors because we aren't aware that there's this other force at work. And that's why studying attachment is so eye-opening, I think. I like to say it's like putting on a pair of glasses, because suddenly when you know the signs of your style and you start to have a sense of other people's styles, you start to understand so many things about the dynamic of that relationship, why people are acting certain ways or not acting certain ways, the level of satisfaction in that relationship, and just things become so much clearer. So I would say, like I was without knowing that, I think there's a lot of confusion or kind of like feeling like you're on a hamster wheel in relationships a lot where you're repeating patterns and you don't know why.
Right. And how does one begin to identify their attachment type?
Well, it's kind of learning first what the core wounds are for each style and also understanding the key characteristics of each style. I have an attachment quiz that I know I gave you. That's a great place to start.
And we'll link that in the show notes.
Yeah. So, you know, quizzes are a great first place. Reading about it, you know, I know when I was reading about it in Attached, I was very clear, okay, I'm anxious. But basically, do you want me to kind of briefly explain the key characteristics of each style?
Yeah, please go ahead.
Okay, cool. So secure people, I always like to start with secure because that's the baseline to understand insecure. So secure people grew up with pretty consistent parents, as I mentioned. And so they tend to be more comfortable with vulnerability, with expressing their emotions, with having other people express their emotions. Someone expressing a large emotion to them isn't going to make them run away. Secure people don't tend to ghost you. You know, they tend to respond. They tend to be pretty easygoing about things. That doesn't mean they never get insecure. They never have feelings, but by and large, it's going to take a lot to scare them away. They like to give people the benefit of the doubt. They might give you room to feel your feelings without judging you. And yeah, they tend to generally be pretty forgiving and kind, and willing to reassure you when you're not feeling at your best. Whereas anxious types tend to, like I said, have a little inconsistency in their parenting, one consistent parent and one inconsistent parent. Anxious types tend to be preoccupied with their relationships because there's always this core fear of being abandoned or rejected. There's a core wound under there of feeling unworthy because they think people are going to leave them, that anxious types overcompensate a lot in their relationships. They're preoccupied with how the person's feeling about them. And so they tend to self-sacrifice a lot. So when you think of someone who's a people pleaser, they tend to be anxious types. Mm-hmm. And they are known for holding in their emotions because of fear of how the person might respond to their needs. They don't feel they're worthy of expressing their needs and of those needs being met, even if this is subconscious, which often it is. I know I used to tell myself I'm a strong woman. I'm worthy. Like, what do you mean unworthy?
Of course.
But down in the depths of my soul, I didn't realize that I didn't feel like I was worthy of this person meeting my needs or responding to me kindly when I had a concern. I felt I was needy. I felt I was going to be clingy. So those are kind of the key characteristics of an anxious type. They tend to kind of put other people's needs before their own and blame mm-hmm. themselves a lot. And so because they hold in their emotions, they tend to build up a lot of resentment and then kind of get upset seemingly out of nowhere to the other person. So that's anxious. And then avoidant types are kind of the opposite because they felt neglected as children, or they were neglected rather, or they didn't have a safe emotional space to express themselves or learn vulnerability was safe. They had to learn to self-soothe. So they tend to be highly independent. They tend to really value their independence, their alone time. That's how they process. They don't really understand the importance of communicating emotions a lot of the time. Sometimes they don't know how to identify their emotions as easily because they just kind of don't think they're safe and ignore them. Mm-hmm. They tend to, when they bond with people, tend to bond over things like common interests and activities versus when anxious types bond or secure people, they might bond over those things, but they'll also share their emotions a lot and talk about how they feel a lot. And avoidant types tend to not do that as much. Avoidant types also tend to get a little bit critical because when they start to feel overwhelmed with emotion, they either can withdraw physically or emotionally, or if they're not withdrawing physically or emotionally, they tend to kind of get mean and a little bit critical and a little bit nitpicky as a way to kind of distance themselves emotionally. So those are the kind of three main types. And right. Secure people actually make up about 50% of the population.
Anxious There's to- hope.
There is, there is. There are more secure people out there. So that is a good thing. The thing is they tend to pair off quickly. So when you're going on the dating apps, most likely that's the struggle, is that a lot of those people have insecure attachment types. Mm. But I met a secure guy on you know, the dating app. So it is possible.
No way.
Yeah. I mean, I met my husband on Tinder of all places.
No way.
Who would think? That's amazing. And I was on a lot of different websites and dating apps, and I had like deleted Tinder like 50 times from my phone. So the fact that I happened to find him one of these times was fate, I think.
Not as meant to be.
Yeah. So secure people are out there, but anxious and avoidant are basically both make up about, I think avoidants are 25% of the population and And I think this is worldwide, but it could just be America. I should double check that. Mm-hmm. I think it's worldwide though. And then anxious people are 20%. So that extra little 5% is actually a combination of both. So that's the fearful avoidant, AKA disorganized attachment, which is a combo of both. And so what that looks like is the fearful avoidant person, they tend to crave love the way that an anxious person does, but they had extra inconsistency in childhood, like maybe both their parents were inconsistent. So they have a core wound of always feeling they're going to be betrayed. And they also have a core wound of feeling unworthy, kind of like the anxious, because they have that side in them. Where so fearful avoidants tend to be really charming and really warm initially, but then if they feel triggered, rather than overcompensate like a true anxious, they avoid like an avoidant. And they also need their alone time. So they kind of do the self-soothing tactic, but they have more emotional grounding and desire than an avoidant person, if that makes sense. So
totally.
And fearful avoidant people tend to be hypersensitive because they're always waiting to be betrayed. So they kind of, I think we talked about this yesterday a little, you know,
because I'm disorganized.
Okay. I didn't want to out you, but yes.
No, I'm 100% disorganized and I will own that.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, disorganized, I'm fascinated with that attachment style. Yeah. Really special people. Like I said, super charming, super warm, usually
5%,
you know, I mean, exactly. You're special. There's only 5% of you, but they tend to, kind of be really sensitive to micro expressions on someone's face, micro, like in tone, you know, kind of read into things really easily. I always say, if you can avoid texting or writing to a fearful avoidant, you want to use your voice as much as possible so they can feel the love. You kind of want to nurture them a lot, but they also tend to sometimes come off as aloof. The way that I like to talk about it, or kind of the analogy I use. And so I don't know if you resonate with this, but like I find that when I have friends who have parents who, you know, American parents who one is Democrat and one's Republican, mm-hmm. they end up kind of being in between, and they end up usually, I find, being a little more apolitical because right. They haven't committed to one way. And so they end up kind of seeming like they don't care. They don't, you know, so that's how I think of, and there's a word for this that I'm blanking on that I use all the time.
That's okay. But that's
how I think of fearful avoidance sometimes. Is just because there's so much inconsistency, and because fearful avoidance go back and forth between wanting to be vulnerable and wanting to avoid. And so sometimes when they don't know how they feel, I don't know if you relate to this, but this feeling of like, well, I just don't know, or I'm not going to go either way, or
100%.
Yeah. So that's kind of a key distinctive factor sometimes of the fearful avoidant.
Yeah.
Once people kind of identify those things in themselves, it makes it easier to start understanding where you're coming from in relationships. And I think sometimes, you know, a factor that comes up for people is, well, I know I'm anxious, but I also have avoidant tendencies. And so they immediately think they're disorganized. But there's this other thing called protest behavior. Mm-hmm. It can show up like avoidance. So protest behavior is basically just anytime when you feel a threat to the connection, to that attachment person you're attached to. For instance, if you're dating someone and they stop texting you and you're like, what happened? And then you text them and then they don't respond. And then you text them more and you text them more. That's actually protest behavior, because what you're protesting is the fact that the relationship is no longer feeling connected. You're protesting that separation. And so you're like, you're like going out of your way to kind of sever that disconnection. But then the opposite of that is if they haven't texted you and you're feeling annoyed, and then they do text you and you just avoid them. Because that's also like, I'm mad at you now, so I'm not going to respond. So that is an avoidance tactic, but it's not true avoidance, because true avoidance is, I am overwhelmed with emotion and I need to go self-soothe right now.
It's so interesting, because when I look at personally where I am now in understanding attachment theory and how I show up within my disorganized attachment style, and how protest behavior, you know, still comes into play, mm-hmm. is now that I have this informed perspective, it's so much easier for myself to dive into the shadow elements of things, because mm-hmm. I can look back to how I would do exactly what you just described. A boyfriend in high school not text me for a bit, and when he finally texts me, I won't respond right away because I'm playing the game now.
Yes.
How attachment style shows up in that, but it also goes back to sitting at the dinner table as a kid and a parent saying, well, your dad's not home for dinner and now I'm mad. And well, he's just stuck in traffic. And there's just this external thing that you can't mm-hmm. control that's mm-hmm. showing up within the relationship, but how those little instances affect you. And until you're consciously aware of them, you can't do anything to change it. You're just caught up in the game of it.
Right. Well, and because again, probably going back to that dinner table, what mom might not have realized at the time is that if she has a certain insecure style, maybe it's anxious, that dad not being home for dinner is actually triggering a deep feeling in her that she's unworthy, that, oh, our family isn't worthy of you being here on time. That's where that's coming from.
Right.
And that's why, yes, the shadow is so important in attachment theory. I find that attachment work is shadow work.
100%.
Because a shadow is basically something that we are ashamed of or don't want to see or don't want to recognize, either in our subconscious mind, that we keep in the dark. And a lot of times our needs are things that we end up keeping in the dark, depending on how we were parented. For instance, if you're a hypersensitive child and we live in a world where you're supposed to be strong and you're supposed to be independent. And if you feel like you need validation as a kid and you're sensitive and you want you're going to cry and your parent keeps telling you to be ashamed and no, you shouldn't cry, especially boys, I know that I was told many a time as a child, like, I'm being too sensitive.
Mm-hmm.
And so that became a shadow of mine. And so I wouldn't express that need. In relationships, when I started to feel really sensitive about something, I would try to push it down because I didn't want the person to know I was sensitive. It became a shadow. Yeah. And so in studying our attachment styles and understanding what we need, we're able to shine a light on those shadows and those needs that we were previously maybe too afraid to express, but that really help us build intimacy in the long run.
Intimacy is something that in a lot of modern day relationships that I've seen when clients come to me for our shadow sessions is that there is no intimacy in the relationship. And I mean, I've experienced that in relationships myself, there not being intimacy, but we stick around a lot longer because we're comfortable with just having a void that we're experiencing in ourselves filled.
Yeah.
And it's likely that that pattern is mirrored in the person and they're feeling that same thing as well.
Yes. And actually, to that point, we stick in relationships because they reinforce the untrue beliefs we already have that we're comfortable with, mm-hmm. like, for instance, the anxious and avoidant combination is one that is deeply triggering for both if they don't have the tools or understanding, but they also reinforce what each are comfortable with. Like when I used to date avoidant men and I was attracted to them, it's because there's something in me that liked I was used to feeling like I had to chase people for attention. That was my comfort zone. So that's why in a way I was comfortable there, even though it was torture. And same for them in the opposite way. They believed that people are needy and overwhelming and they are better off on their own. And dating someone like me only reinforced that for them. So our shadows get kind of like stuck when we're in relationships like that where there isn't a secure level of intimacy. I would argue where there's very little intimacy, right. Like you said. And I think a lot of times people just don't know what real intimacy looked like. I actually had a client the other day who said, I had to look up the word intimacy because when people talk about it, I'm like, what does that even mean? And I almost had trouble explaining it to her because to me, it's such a given. And that was a real aha moment for me of like, oh, like we need to break this down even further.
Something I tune into as you were sharing the experiences just then were this thought that someone who is an anxious attachment style when they're seeking out a partner, they turn to someone who is avoidant because they themselves are avoiding their core feelings and their needs. And someone who is avoidant turns to an anxious partner because they hyperfixate and are anxious on needing time alone, what other people are thinking. So then again, we have this shadow element that's at play.
Yeah. And that's really interesting. I think that that is another element of shadow, that avoidant people are anxious about being intimate.
Yeah.
You know, they're anxious about feeling close to someone. They don't know what to do with that. And so it does, I think, create a certain level of anxiety in them. And yes, I think of anxious people end up trying to avoid their feeling of worthlessness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's not something you want to feel. And so rather than sitting with themselves and admitting they feel that way, there's this kind of compulsive desire to be validated by someone else, to feel real reassured by someone else.
Right.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Something that I want to discuss, because this comes up a lot in client sessions, and it's the butterfly feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And how so many people, they'll come to a session and they'll say, I think I've met the person for me. I got butterflies when I met them. And it's funny because I talk about this and I get the butterfly feeling in my stomach. And what I've learned from my own inner work, my development, and my coaching is that having that butterfly feeling is actually a trauma response.
Yeah. When we have butterflies, it's actually because our stomach is constricting and we end up having I believe our blood vessels get tight. And so we have low blood flow to our stomach. And so it gives us that feeling, that light feeling. And it's our parasympathetic nervous system, actually, that is a response to our fight or flight sympathetic nervous system. So basically, if we're stressed out, that kind of tries to balance us out. Our gut, our parasympathetic nervous system tries to balance this fight or flight stress in our sympathetic nervous system. And so it's actually because you're stressed out a little bit and with someone who maybe isn't secure, that they're triggering you a little. And so it feels, we've for some reason come to associate it with this excitement, nervous feeling.
Mm-hmm.
But you also think about when you have that feeling, might also be before a performance or before you have to do something, it comes from stress. So it's really interesting because especially anxious types, and I know this was true for me, we end up not going for secure people because they don't give us that feeling of butterflies. We don't feel nervous. We don't feel anxious. And that's what we're used to. That's what we associate with when we like somebody. But the secure person doesn't make us feel nervous. I never felt nervous with my husband. And so it ends up being that we assume that they're the nice guy, you know, like the nice guys finish last.
Right.
It's really secure guys finish last, you know, because it's usually the nice guy who's secure and who we think is too nice. Or, you know, I said that about my husband when I first met him. I was like, I don't know if he's too nice, you know. And now I am so grateful he's so nice every day, you know.
Yeah.
But at the time, I thought it wasn't exciting, you know, that he was available. So I'm used to going to these unavailable people who give me butterflies and make me nervous. And so, yeah, it's actually not necessarily what you want. Working with attachment and learning it, a lot of it has to do too with identifying how we feel in our bodies and seeing where we're holding our emotions and being really aware of that. And if you're feeling that in your stomach, that could be a sign for you. Like, maybe I don't feel safe with this person.
Mm, that's also a great way to prompt yourself into the deeper shadow there. Mm-hmm. When have I felt this before? And taking it back step by step through age and regression, conscious regression, and taking it back to that initial childhood wound where you felt that feeling.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any other exercises that people can do to help identify their shadow within their attachment style?
Well, It's called ACT therapy, acceptance commitment therapy. Basically, it works with mindfulness. But basically in ACT therapy, what they say is the first thing you want to do is just observe yourself. When our attachment system is activated and we're feeling like we either, if you're avoidant, that means you feel like you want to flee and be alone. Or if you're anxious, it means you're just obsessing over the situation and you can't stop thinking about it. If you're in one of those states where you're dysregulated like that, basically, that means that we're in our, again, our sympathetic nervous system at that time, our reptilian brain, our fight or flight response, where we feel consumed with an emotion. And so the best way to get out of feeling that way is to start trying to reflect on your emotions. Because when we reflect on our emotions, we immediately are taken out of that emotional part of our brain and we start using our prefrontal cortex and our neocortex, which are the more logical parts of our brain. So if we're able to sit and we're feeling anxious or feeling avoidant, and we just start observing our bodies and tap into our bodies and where am I feeling tightness? Where am I feeling emotion right now in my body? You know, maybe some people start, like I start feeling a tightness in my chest. Some people start feeling kind of discomfort in their stomach. Sometimes anger can make people feel like a burning sensation in their arms. Maybe your jaw tightens. If you start paying attention to that, just the act of noticing that will bring you down a little bit from feeling that intense. And if you observe where that emotion is coming from, then you also then want to try and name that emotion. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of the first step. And then usually the reason we have been triggered like that is because at the core of it all, a need of ours is not being met. And so really kind of learning more about your attachment style and those key characteristics I mentioned and understanding those core wounds of where that need is coming from. So for me, like if someone didn't text me back for a while, to go back to that example, and I'm having a flare up and feeling like I can't stop thinking about it, I would, you know, the need and that I'm feeling right now is this acknowledgement that I'm worthy of you responding to me. If you can verbalize what that need is, you know, there's a really interesting and smart woman named Sue Johnson, she's kind of known for developing her own form of couples therapy that's based on attachment theory. And she believes that every interaction in every relationship comes down to our core wounds, that what we might say it and think it's all these different things, but it's always, do you love me? Am I lovable? You know, am I worthy? You know, and so for each style, we have a different fear. You know, for fearful avoidant, the fear is I'm going to be betrayed. If you're feeling really either avoidant or really anxious, again, go through that process, notice it in your body, name that emotion, and then say, what is it that I really need right now? And is it that I'm afraid that I'm going to be betrayed? Most likely, yes. How can I express this to this person? That's the next step. You know, how can I communicate clearly? And that's a really big piece, is that oftentimes insecure attachment types don't communicate directly. And usually it helps to speak in simple language, as direct as possible, not blaming them, but just saying, I feel this, without the fluff, without kind of trying to over-explain yourself. And it can be really, this can be really difficult for some people, but it just takes practice. Right. And then just every day, you know, it's kind of like preparing yourself every day to be mindful and be present. Because the truth is that intimacy exists in the present moment. Because if we're too obsessed with our trauma, or if we're too afraid of what might happen in the future, those are both fear-based things that are taking us out of the present moment. And intimacy is being able to connect emotionally in the present moment, which can feel really scary for some people, which is why mindfulness practices are so good for attachment theory. So just every morning, waking up and trying to have some kind of mindfulness practice is really good. focusing on the little things each day that you're grateful for is good. And also being able to say to yourself and start identifying, like, what do I need today? And getting in the habit of asking what I need, especially for anxious types and sometimes fearful avoidance. We're always so focused on what the other person wants and needs. It's really disempowering. And so that's why attachment theory is so empowering, because it makes you flip that and really examine what your needs are. Because the more clear you are on your needs, it's like Brené Brown says, clear is kind. The more clear you are on your own needs, the more clear you can be with your partner and vice versa, so that you can start meeting each other's needs. And that's how you start moving into a more secure relationship and true intimacy.
That's beautiful. Something I want to add on to that is, as you're identifying your needs, know that your needs are not a to-do list, because I found, and I know clients of mine have found, that as they're going through and identifying their needs, they are making a list of, I need to do this, I need to do that. And it's like, no, that is not you, that you're making your to-do list for the day. Your needs are what your inner self is asking of you and how you can overcome them.
Yeah. And I think that ties in a little bit to what we were talking about in terms of being fixers.
Exactly.
Yes. And the distinction that, you know, a lot of people say, okay, I have an insecure attachment style. How do I fix that now? And I always really try to reiterate that, especially for people like us in the wellness space who are really interested in personal growth and in being our highest version of ourselves, we hear of, you know, a healthier, seemingly healthier way to do something, and we immediately latch onto that and want to fix ourselves to do that immediately. But the difference between, you know, attachment work and relationship work in general and just personal growth work is that it's not just you who's involved. So you can be as woke as possible as an individual human being, but there's still going to be a chemical reaction when you're paired with somebody else. And so it's really not so much about fixing your attachment style, because likely, you know, 70% of people have the same attachment style most of their life. So it's not about fixing it as much as understanding it and observing what are the common themes that trigger it for you. You know, like me, people not responding to me, doesn't matter if it's a romantic relationship or an acquaintance or whatever, like that gets to my core. And I now am aware of it enough to say, okay, step back. They could be busy. They could have missed this email. It's not a personal affront to you. They haven't just changed their mind. But 9 times out of 10, I will get that reaction immediately if I feel like it's taken someone too long to respond to me.
It's beautiful awareness to have, and it does make navigating attachment and honestly yourself and your wounds so much easier. And giving yourself the grace for what you're experiencing is, I think, another really important step.
Yeah. And that's, again, why it ties well with shadow work. It's about accepting our shadows, acknowledging that they're there, saying, I might not know what to do with this right now, but I know that this is where it's coming from at the very least. And the more awareness we bring to that regularly, the more we're able to accept it as a part of ourselves and slowly overcome it.
And that right there, I truly believe, sums up when people say, well, before you enter into a relationship, you need to love yourself. Because going to the shadow is the ultimate form of self-care and love.
Yes.
And showing up in that makes that process easier. There's still going to be difficulties, but it makes it a lot easier. And when we usually hear people say, you know, you have to love yourself before you enter into a partnership, so many of us are quick to say, I love myself. Of course I love myself. I'm a strong, independent woman, and now I want my man, you know? That's not self-love. Self-love is going to the core. Right. And that's how you begin to love yourself.
Totally. And I think that's such a great example. And the independent piece is something I think about a lot, because especially, you know, culturally, we value independence. And I think that in post-feminist America, women, you know, in our freedom and in our liberation, there was this moment where we had to kind of take on the male qualities to prove we're equal. We can be independent too. And that's not to say women can't be independent and strong, right. But in attachment theory, actually in the book Attached, they make this great distinction between independence and self-sufficiency and being able to pay your own bills and make your own decisions and all of that. That is being self-sufficient, but humans by nature are a social creature. So being independent isn't like the end all be all. And just being independent doesn't mean you love yourself. You can be proud of yourself, but truly loving yourself is knowing you're an imperfect human, as we all are. And I think accepting that and loving yourself with your imperfections is the hardest thing to do, but that is truly self-love. And it builds intimacy when you are able to take that weight of perfectionism off of you, because then you also simultaneously understand that your partner is not going to be perfect either. And so that's where true intimacy can happen, is when those expectations aren't lowered. We still have standards for how we want to be treated, but we also, like a secure person, are able to give people a little more forgiveness and leeway and benefit of the doubt that they're doing their best. And in that understanding is where that intimacy really flourishes.
Mm. It comes back to the interdependence of things.
Yes.
And something that I want to point out that you mentioned yesterday in our session is that your partner doesn't need to fill every need that you have. You have to fill that yourself. And there's other people in your life, like your friends, your family, work colleagues that can fill some of those needs.
Yes. There should always be respect and acknowledgement. You shouldn't feel ignored or pushed aside by your partner, but especially in terms of, you know, activities in your life or, you know, understanding every part about you, they can appreciate you without being the person you go to for every single thing. There's this great book, dating book, called The Four-Man Plan. And she talks about how someone once told her, you need four men to keep you satisfied. And in all her, throughout her book, that's kind of the theme. But the conclusion she comes to is actually the most fulfilled we'll ever truly be is with 3.5 men, that there's always going to be this half part of them that it's not going to be able to fulfill you and vice versa. And that's okay. But it still means you can express your needs to them, but also respect that sometimes they might not be capable of meeting something specifically.
Well, Taryn, is there anything else you would like to add as we wrap up today that we didn't touch on that you're just itching to share with these listeners?
God, I don't know. I feel like we covered a lot.
So much.
I would just say self-compassion, you know, I talked about this in my newsletter this week, just that feeling our emotions is one thing, but it's so hard to identify and feel our emotions if we're judging ourselves. And again, that goes back to what we value sometimes as a culture is strength and independence and feeling emotional about something, even if we might consciously not believe it. A lot of times we have these subconscious judgments that that's weakness. Mm-hmm. And that really can hinder our being authentic with people because we're judging ourselves. And I know I have friends, I have clients, I myself used to be so mean to myself for feeling this way, you know, and that only compounds it and makes it worse. So I would say when doing this work, when going deep and really trying to grow and be honest with yourself, try your best to give yourself a space that's safe, at least from your own self-judgment, because there's enough judgment in the world. Let's not judge ourselves, you know, and just be really kind to ourselves and think about how would you talk to a child? How would you treat a child? Because that is where all of the most painful parts of us are coming from, you know.
Beautiful. How can people stay in touch with you or find out what type of attachment style they have?
So there are quite a few ways to get in touch with me. My website, truerlove.com. You can always send me a message through there and learn more about my work. Instagram, I'm on the gram every day, at @truer_. So don't forget the underscores. They can email me. My email's on my website as well. I'm really love talking about this stuff, as you can tell. So I'm always open to talking to people, answering questions. I also offer free half-hour consultations. So if anyone wants to work with me one-on-one, I offer 6-session packages because I feel like 6 sessions is a good amount of time to really do the shadow work and then learn the new rules of kind of how to approach life and relationships. And so it's kind of like a attachment style and just relationships in general, boot camp. There's that in terms of kind of if you really want to dig deep on your attachment style and how it shows up in your life and your relationships. Of course, you can always take the quiz that you mentioned that you're going to put in the show notes. That yes. attachment quiz is the best way to first just understand your style. And then from there, you'd receive a series of emails from me that give you much more information on attachment and identifying your own style. So that's the good stuff. And I also have a course that I'm going to drop soon. It's dropped a little, but I'm kind of tweaking it to make it even better. My conscious communication mini course, and it's using attachment theory to communicate and understand people's styles and how to best communicate with them. Yeah, that's on my website as well.
That sounds like something we all need.
I think it's really helpful personally. It's just like all the most important things I learned about attachment and communicating and put them all in one. So, and it's 2.5 hours. So it's not super long either.
Perfect. Digestible amount of time.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Taryn, so much for being here. We will link all of Taryn's information in the show notes, her Instagram, her website, the quiz, the mini course, once that's released, it'll be there. Head to the show notes to stay in touch with Taryn. Taryn, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. This has been such a privilege. And I am so grateful for you sharing your wisdom with all of us.
I am so honored to be here. And it's been lovely. I feel like we just had a chat, like, were mm-hmm. we even recording right now?
Right. For real.
Just a hangout. So thank you. I really appreciate you asking me to be on.
Thank you. Well, Taryn, I hope you have a beautiful rest of your day. Thank you so much. Bye.
Bye.
Conscious creators, that's today's episode with Taryn Newton Gill of Truer Love. And there were a few glitches in the audio, and one of those happened right when Taryn dropped her Instagram name. So it's @_truerlove_. Like she said, don't forget those underscores. You won't find her otherwise. To make it a little easier for you all, I have linked her information, her Instagram, her website, and that amazing attachment quiz in the show notes. Fun fact, I learned what my attachment style was through a quiz in therapy. Yes, we sat there doing these quizzes. It was actually kind of fun. I felt like I was taking a BuzzFeed quiz, except in a safe space. And so Taryn's just giving you her version of that. And she's incredible. You heard it here. You heard her. Wow. She blows me away. But now, what you've all been waiting for. Today's card is the 3 of Pentacles. This card is asking you to call upon your team and to seek collaboration. Sometimes, within our inner circles, if people reach out to help us, we can get really triggered by their offering. So take that information, if someone reaches out to you to help, and reprogram that. Shift it into understanding that them offering to help is them showing you love. That is their way of expressing it. And you can either get defensive within that action, or you can set firm boundaries, or you can accept it lovingly. Today, affirm to yourself, I am open. Vulnerability is my strength, not my weakness. Let's say that again, but together this time. I am open. Vulnerability is my strength, not my weakness. Sit with that affirmation, repeat it to yourself as often as you need, and understand that you are loved, you are supported, you are divinely guided, and you are creating consciousness. I'll be back next week with another episode. And in the meantime, if you want to stay connected, head to my website, www.thisconsciousness.com, and book a session with me. I would be more than happy to hold space for you and hold your hand as we dive deep into your unconscious and subconscious conditionings. Until next time, conscious creators.